Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Good morning. I'm Rich Payne, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Rich.
Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. There may be some who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity at the public level. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of the press, radio, TV, and films. Thus, we respectfully ask that no AA speaker, indeed any AA member, be identified by full name in published or broadcast reports of our meetings. The assurance of anonymity is essential in our effort to help other problem drinkers who may wish to share our recovery program with us. And our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles come before personalities. I now give you Philomena R., who will read how it works.
Good morning. I am a very grateful recovering alcoholic, and my name is Philomena.
Hi, Philomena.
I choose to say it this way because it's most important to me what I am and not who I am. How it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do not recover if they have the capacity, to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked him his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. Number one. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Number two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Number three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Number four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Number 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Number 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Number 7, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. Number 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Number 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Number 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Number 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Number 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaim, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholics and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if He were sought. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. I would now like to introduce Jerry S., who will introduce you to your new state officer.
Thank you, Rich. I am Jerry S., and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Jerry.
Boy, this is great this morning. And you people have got a great treat coming because you're going to be rid of some of us older hands and get some new faces up here. And I want to introduce to you the incoming panel 30 officers who the Assembly elected yesterday to serve you for the coming 2 years. Selected for our panel 30 Kansas area delegates, a fellow that I think you all know and respect, it's Larry Traeger. Larry, would you stand up? We're not going to let them talk yet. Their time's coming. We're going to have 2 years of listening to Larry. Backing Larry up is our alternate delegate, Bob T. Bob? And that lucky individual that gets to succeed me, our new area chairman, Bob O.R. down here. And we're blessed with the fact that we're keeping one beautiful face with us, our secretary in the past and going to remain as such for us, Phil R. Phil? And a fellow that seemed to have the knack of making money, and we hope he can keep a hold of it, our new treasurer, John, down here on the end, John E. And personally, I want to thank each and every one of you for a continuing 12-step call on me for the past 4 years. God bless you, and I love y'all.
Thank you, Jerry. I guess to qualify, maybe I better ask you if any of you ever had trouble getting that first drink down and breaking out in a cold sweat when it was 10 below. I did, but through the grace of this program, my group, Colby Sixth Street, my sponsor, and a power whom I choose, a higher power who I choose to call God, I haven't found it necessary to do that as I took my last drink 7 years ago today.
Happy birthday.
I have really enjoyed this conference, and it's been beautiful, and I always enjoy seeing you beautiful people. But now I'm real anxious to hear from our speaker, Phil P. from Newport Beach, California. Phil.
Good morning. My name is Phil Petty, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Phil.
I would like to make one correction on the program. I am listed as being from Los Angeles, California. I am not. Los Angeles, California has a baseball team that will end its season today. I am from Orange County, California, where the playoffs will begin on Tuesday. I live in Newport Beach. I would like to complain about the catering at this conference, but it's been the best I have seen in many a year. I've never seen as many people fed as well and as quickly as these people have done for three meals. I think it's been outstanding. I would like to complain about the violent breaking of the ninth tradition by the people who put this conference on. Since the ninth tradition begins, AA as such shall never be organized. And this thing has been organized beautifully. It's run very well, and I want to thank personally Barney and Marnie, which sounds like a third-rate comedy team in a waterfront dive, for their efforts here. I think Jerry has done a terrific job, and I want to congratulate the incoming state officers. For those of you in the back of the room who may not have had a chance to see them closely, I did. And all I can say is, if I lived in Kansas, I think I'd call a bonding company and be sure the premiums were paid for the coming year. In all seriousness, it is a pleasure to be with you this morning. I don't know if there would be anybody attending a first meeting on an occasion like this, but if they did, they would already have experienced some of the relief that I experienced in my first meeting when Rich got up and identified himself as an alcoholic, because Rich doesn't look like one. And of course, Philomena got up and identified herself as an alcoholic, and she doesn't look like one. And the members of the state slate here were all introduced to you as alcoholics, and they don't look like alcoholics. And then, of course, if you have any sense of discretion and taste, you have already concluded that I don't look like an alcoholic. Now, I have been an active member of this fellowship and continuously sober for 17 and a half years, and I would guess that in local meetings, regional, state, national, and international conferences, conventions, and so on, that I have seen upwards of 250,000 recovering alcoholics over the years. I have been taking a survey in all of these meetings to find out, or to look for, people who look like alcoholics. And I am happy to report that up to and including this morning, I have seen fewer than 10 people in AA meetings who look like alcoholics, every one of whom turned out to be a member of Al-Anon. There's a good reason for that. Did you ever make book on a new couple walking in? Which one is the drunk? You know, I am invariably wrong. I keep forgetting. If you drank like I did, I was anesthetized for most of my drinking career. To this day, I don't remember parts of my story. But the poor non-alcoholic spouse has had to live through every rotten minute of it, you know. They are bound to pick up mileage along the way. Luckily, when they get into Al-Anon, they get younger looking quicker than we do, and it all balances out. In the interest of greater AA Al-Anon harmony, I would like to make one other observation to the Al-Anons who are present here today, male and female, and who have done such a tremendous job here this weekend. Your drinking habits are every bit as peculiar to me as mine ever were to you. Have you ever seen an Al-Anon drink? My wife, Joni, who is here with me, is a good example. She is currently quaffing it down at the rate of about a fifth every 2 years. You give her two of those little plastic drinks they give you on an airplane, and it will take her all the way to Hong Kong. As our speaker said last night, if you gave me two of those little plastic drinks and I didn't think you had a bottle to back it up, I would have said, don't tease me, let's not even get started if we're not serious about it. But I'm a great believer in the Al-Anon program, and I say this sincerely. I have seen recoveries in Al-Anon that are every bit as miraculous as any I have ever seen in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so long as this remains a family illness, and I am convinced it is, we will need a family recovery. And I am personally grateful to Al-Anon for the happiness that you have added to my life, not only through my wife, Joan, but also personally in attending your meetings and in learning from you. I'm kind of a garden variety drunk. I don't have any tremendous story to tell. I did most of the things that drinkers do in order to qualify for AA membership. And if you are my kind of drunk, you don't come to Alcoholics Anonymous first. Now, my kind of drunk is a phony. And therefore, if you develop my problem, it comes on in reverse. I didn't realize I had a drinking problem until several months after it had become apparent that I was having trouble sobering up. And if you're my kind of phony, when that problem arises, you don't go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I wouldn't have been caught dead in here. I went to a posh psychiatrist at a fancy address, and I lied to him, and he didn't help me, so I didn't pay him. And then I went to what the book calls health farms and sanitariums, and I had a nice one going. It was a combination, alcoholic geriatric institution for some who were aged and some who were alcoholic and some who were both. And they didn't help me either. And I went through the public forms of alcoholism therapy. You know, the hospitals, the jails, the sanitariums, and so on. And only after I had gone to all of these was I reluctantly willing to admit that maybe I wouldn't be completely tarnished if I went to one meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to a meeting with great reluctance because I was absolutely convinced you were going to break my anonymity. And I knew how you would do it. I went to my first meeting in Long Beach, California in June 1961, and I knew that in one of the days following that meeting, I would run into one or more of you on the street, you would speak to me, and then everybody would know I had been to AA because you were supposed to look like alcoholics. And as I previously said, you don't. And I was amazed that night, and I have been amazed at every meeting since, and I am amazed this morning in realizing that the alcoholics of the world are cleverly disguised to look like ordinary human beings. And there is great truth in the old cliche that if you can't smell them, you can't tell them. So I went to that first meeting with great reluctance. Now, at that time, I had 4 cents in cash. I had my entire wardrobe on my back. I had an old car that I had terribly overvalued at $150. And I had almost a full pack of cigarettes. And I lived in a recovery house for the first 2 months I was around the program on credit, because I had no job and no prospect for getting any. My nearest relative was 2,000 miles away, and if they thought I was coming in their direction, they would have moved further. And to this day, I feel close to people who come into AA through recovery houses of one kind or another. I came and I listened to these meetings. And I had some misgivings about you. To this day, I have always been suspicious of newcomers who come in here and seem to buy this thing too quickly. Because, do you remember how you felt the first time you saw the 12 steps? I thought that was the biggest joke I had ever seen. I thought if I tried to live by those principles, I would be at the mercy of every door-to-door book salesman and used car dealer in the world. That they might just as well write "trick" right across my forehead. I thought it was totally unworkable because, like every other newcomer, I had never had any exposure to a program based upon rigorous honesty, and therefore I didn't know whether it would work or not. But anyway, I was very suspicious in my first meeting, and I would like to tell you that at some point in the first 3 months, some individual or some single event or some group had a tremendous effect on me, but it just didn't happen that way. All I know is when I came here on the first night, I thought you were about the funniest bunch I had ever seen. And 3 months later, I wanted to be like you, and I didn't know why. Now, I drank once after I came to the program, and when I came back, I went into that recovery. And I got a job. I got a job in a department store selling T-shirts and sweat socks, and it was about all I could handle. But one nice thing about being a department store clerk, if you are a newcomer to Alcoholics Anonymous, You do not take the problems of management home with you in the evening. You got plenty of time to go to meetings, and I went 8 to 10 times a week. For a while I went because you were my only source of fresh pastry. When I was living in a recovery house and my car wasn't working, nobody would give me a ride anywhere else. And I went a lot because I developed a liking for you almost immediately. Not so much for your program, but for you personally. And that was very important to me. As time went on, things began to get better for me, as they do for everybody. Now, I don't know whether this is true of anybody else, but I suspect it may be. During the time that I have been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, every single good thing that has happened to me has begun with a period of intense emotional pain. I am a creature of habit, and even a bad habit, once broken, causes me some anxiety for the loss. And it's a little ridiculous, I suppose, but I'm stuck with it. For example, after I'd been in that department store for about a year, I really didn't care for that line of work. And a friend of mine on the program told me that the aerospace industry was hiring anybody who came out. And I got to thinking about it, and I developed a terrific conflict internally. I thought on the one hand, well, here I have a job I don't like, but I know I can do it, and I can have it for as long as I want. On the other hand, I'd like to do something different. But if I go out there, maybe they won't like me, and they'll fire me, and then I'll have no job. And so I mulled this over briefly for about 6 months. And when the pain of not doing it became too great, I went out and I applied and I got into the aerospace industry. And sure enough, they were hiring everybody. And I inadvertently found I had stumbled into a godsend. Because I had already been in the Navy, so I knew how to look busy without doing anything. Which is a tremendous help in any large corporation. And particularly in those days when they had the cost-plus fixed-fee contracts. I liked it so well I stayed there for 7 years. But in any event, when I was about 3 years sober, I began to undergo another period of psychic pain. Because it occurred to me that I did not want to do what I was doing for a living for the rest of my life. And in order to do something I really would like to do better, I would have to go back to school. Now, I talked it over with my family and my friends and everybody that would listen to me. I knew there would have to be some minor adjustments in my AA activities because I was going back to school at night. After a long period of time, when the pain became too great not to, I enrolled in school and went back. I had great misgivings about it. First off, I was afraid I would flunk out and everybody in my home group would laugh at me. I'm a member of the celebrated Lenox Avenue Friday Night Participation Group in Huntington Beach, California, by the way. And my home group, I think, is typical. I don't know why I thought they'd laugh at me because I might stub my toe. When you think about it logically, if right now you lost everything you've attained in the world materially, not one friend that you've developed in Alcoholics Anonymous would be lost to you. Because nobody here developed a friendship for you for what you've got. It's for what you are. And I don't know of any other group in the world that's like that. If I lost everything today, the only predictable emotion I would recognize in my home group the next time I went to it might be a little bit of envy because my story would be better the next time I spoke. But I worried about failing. And I'd never been much of a scholar. I'd gone to college during the Korean War and I'd gotten through the University of Illinois, but I did just enough to get by and nothing more. In any event, when the pain became too great to stay where I was, I enrolled. And I made myself a promise that if school interfered with my AA activities, I would quit immediately and go right back to meetings every night. And that I would maintain my AA activity along with the schooling. And I think largely because of that promise, because I made it to myself, I didn't have to keep it. Things went very well for me. I had never gone to school one day at a time before. And by this time, you had taught me to live that way. And so this time I didn't worry about the end of the curriculum or the end of the year or whatever may follow. I just went in with today's lesson today. And much to the shock of my wife and my sponsor and my friends, 4 years later I graduated and I did reasonably well. I had gone back to law school, and now I was faced with still another emotionally painful decision. Should I take the bar exam? Because if I took it and passed, I would probably want to go into practice, and I would starve. On the other hand, I could keep this old job that I had, which I didn't care much for by this time, but I knew I could handle it. Well, when the pain of not doing anything became too great, I took the bar exam, and much to the shock of my wife and my sponsor and my friends, I passed. And I went into practice fully prepared to starve, and it didn't happen that way. Things got very good. My finances took a significant jump. Things went very well for me. And I found at that time something that I had not realized before, that any significant change in my lifestyle, whether it is catastrophic or absolutely terrific, creates exactly the same anxiety. And you have to get closer to the program when the anxieties begin to deepen on you. And I found myself going to a lot of meetings and staying very close to the people that I had come to know and love in this program. And for almost 6 years thereafter, I was a member of a reasonably prosperous law firm in Orange County, California, until a series of disasters began to befall me, which resulted in my losing the right to practice law. They began in October of 1975. At that time, one of my partners became ill and had to withdraw from the practice. I thought it was extremely short-sighted of him to treat me this way. It never occurred to me that his diabetes and high blood pressure were not caught for my benefit. I was about to go on vacation when the poor guy came down with these problems. And my wife, with that cold Al-Anon logic that occasionally pervades our homes, suggested that if the problem were really as cataclysmic as I thought, it would still be here when we got back from vacation, so why don't we go and have a nice time anyway? And I've never been one to hit ladies, but I came close on that occasion. We went on vacation, we had one of the best times in our lives, came back, and on the day that I got back, when the accountants had told us we were going to have to dissolve the partnership as of December 1, 1975, for tax purposes, I looked down on my desk, and on the top of the incoming mail, there was a notice that the West Orange County Court was going to be taking on a commissioner. In California, a trial commissioner does virtually the same things that a judge does, and they were taking applications. And this was the first time that I had been eligible to apply and did not have partnership responsibilities to keep me from it, so I applied. I'm one of those people who lost jobs because of my drinking, so when I fill out an application or a resume, I have to put that down, and I did. But I also put down the fact that you and I have been keeping company for a few years now, and some of the things that we've been doing together. And about a month after I applied, the screening committee of judges of that court called in 20 of us out of the, I think it was 107 who had applied, and interviewed us. And my interview was very good. We talked about everything except Alcoholics Anonymous and recovery and alcoholism. And I figured out why on the way back to the office that day. I figured they'd already decided to hire one of their buddies, and they didn't want to embarrass me by bringing this up. Not realizing that I have never been embarrassed by you or my association with you, and I'm proud of it and I tell people about it. But in any event, about a week later, I got another call to come back for another interview. And this time they talked about nothing but you and recovery. And the problems of alcoholism. And later that month, in December of 1975, I was notified that I had received the appointment and that as of January, I could go to work as a trial commissioner. I later found out from the judges who had done the initial screening that they felt that the fact that I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous was a significant advantage over some of the other applicants because of my knowledge of alcohol and drug problems, which takes up about 70% of our caseload. So the next time you want to tell me about what a terrible stigma or handicap it is to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, write to me and I'll give you an address where it can be sent. I've never found that to be true. In any event, I went to work, and I could have held that job happily for the rest of my life. I enjoyed it. I was doing mostly traffic cases there. But unfortunately, on my sponsor's 30th AA birthday, Governor Brown removed me from my job as a commissioner by appointing me to a regular judgeship in the North Orange County Municipal Court in Fullerton, California, where I've now been for 2.5 years. That's the district that has Anaheim Stadium and Disneyland and Knott's Berry Farm, and I feel right at home there. My sponsor thinks it's outrageously funny that on his 30th birthday, one of his babies became one of the people he was most afraid of when he came to Alcoholics Anonymous. The judiciary is an interesting occupation. I recommend it highly to any recovered alcoholic. And I particularly enjoy seeing alcoholics in the course of my work. I see them every day. The alcoholics in my courtroom are a little difficult to distinguish because they come in looking like judges, lawyers, police officers, bailiffs, probation officers, civil litigants, and when they're finished, they leave. The social drinkers, on the other hand, are immediately easy to spot. They all come up with Orange County Jail across their chest, and they're wearing handcuffs. and they are mortally offended if any of us suggest that they might have an alcoholic problem. Now, I think anybody visiting us from another planet who looked in there would immediately conclude that if you were to become an Earthling, an alcoholic would be a highly desirable state, if only by comparison with those who haven't quite made it yet. A knowledge of alcoholism is very handy in any criminal calendar. I've had some experience along those lines. I tend to be a little firm with people who continue to drink, although I try to be supportive of those who have decided to try to stop. I had a fellow in front of me once. I looked down at his chart when he came in. He was in custody. And the minute his case was called, he advised me that he would have to get out of jail on that particular day because he was going into a 12-step house we had there in Orange County, and they would only take people on that particular day. I've been a member of the board of that step house for a number of years. We've never had a rule that we only take newcomers on Wednesdays. So that wasn't playing too well. Then he told me that he was en route to an AA meeting. Incidentally, he did not know that I belonged to the program, as I later found out. And he was stopped because he had had two beers. I checked the police report and found out that he hadn't been stopped. He had been sleeping under some shrubbery, and they thought he was dead when they went over. Finally, I looked at his report, and I noticed that he'd been in there 2 weeks earlier, and the judge who had seen him at that time had given him 60 days in jail and suspended it on condition he not get arrested for 6 months. And then he hit me with a clincher, that he wanted to go back to Alcoholics Anonymous because he liked your philosophy of easy does it. I told him I thought that was terrific, but he was going to have to do 60 days, first things first. We managed to have somebody meet him when he did his 60 days. We got him into that recovery house. Incidentally, it was not a Wednesday. And last I heard, he was doing quite well, and I was very pleased by it. I don't know about you, but when the chips are down, when I tend to get depressed or anxious, I go to small discussion groups, and I keep a few in reserve. And there's one in Huntington Beach, California, that I go to with some regularity. It's got a good hard core of sobriety and common sense in it. And a year or so ago, well, over a year ago, I went to it on a particular Tuesday night, and it was one of those meetings where the honesty was so strong you could almost tap dance on it at the end of the meeting. And when the meeting was coming to an end, the group secretary got up and said he would sign court cards, and we said the Lord's Prayer, and after the meeting was over, a well-dressed lady in her 60s came over to me and said, "Would you please sign my court card?" And I said, "I'd be happy to, but I am not the group secretary." And she said, "No, sir, but you are the bastard who sentenced me here." She said, "I want you to remember me when I come back." I did. She brought us twice the number of meetings on that court card that we had ordered her to attend. She's now had two birthdays. She is a good friend, and I love her dearly. And after we became friends, I asked her why she gave us all those extra meetings. And she said, "Because I resented the hell out of having to come here." She said, "I wouldn't have minded it if I had hated those people, or if I had not believed anything they said, but," she said, "from about the third or fourth meeting, I found myself looking forward to it. And I liked them. And I liked everything about the program. And the more I liked them, the more I hated you." And she said, "The only way I knew of proving to you that you couldn't force me to come to these meetings was to bring back twice the number that you'd ordered me to attend." I really wish a lot more newcomers had that kind of resentment going for them in this program. She's a great gal. I've always liked to see newcomers in meetings. I guess in part because of my occupation, newcomers and I are going to see something of each other, one way or the other. And I personally would much prefer it to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd like to talk for just a moment about something that is essentially uncomfortable for me, but I think it needs to be said. I'm lucky. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous as an unemployed bum, and I have sort of gone through the ranks with you. And I have noticed there have been some changes in the way that my friends in Alcoholics Anonymous occasionally will react to situations that arise in AA. I have noticed from my own standpoint, and I have seen it more obviously in California than anywhere else, that occasionally we will get someone into Alcoholics Anonymous who is prominent in the community. or indeed who has had a great deal of publicity, or who by his occupation may be in a significant position. And I think there is a well-meaning tendency to treat that person differently, if only slightly differently, than we would treat any other newcomer walking in that door. And if we do that, we may kill him. One of the reasons I sobered up is because you treated me exactly like everybody else. And one of the reasons I think other people sober up in here is because once you come into Alcoholics Anonymous, you are a recovering alcoholic and nothing else. And I know that the people who are prominent in the community are the first to say, please don't treat me like anything except a member of this fellowship. But I think it's important that we remember there are no classes of membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. That we all have to be treated the same way. Because if we start being deferential to anybody, the price that they may pay is death or insanity. And that's too great to ask. And so I make it a point of saying in the meetings that I go to that if at the end of the meeting you call me by my first name and want to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous, I will be here until the lights go out. But if you call me Judge or Your Honor or anything else that refers to my occupation, I get nervous. And I tend to spill my coffee in your lap. I'm here not because of anything except the fact that, hey, I'm a drunk who can't stay sober without you. And you've changed my life, and I'm grateful. And I need you more now than I needed you 17 and a half years ago when I had my last drink. And I think we all stand exactly in the same relationship. And I hope we don't forget it. Now, I have another job that I do in the summertime that I had not intended to talk about very much here today because of the proximity of Wichita to Kansas City. For the last 14 years, I was one of the regular public address announcers for the California Angels in the summertime. And I fill in occasionally for the Dodgers and the Rams. This year, I've just done spot work, but I'm still staying with it, and I'm going back home now because I expect to be occupied in part during the playoffs. When I started with the Angels in 1965, they were still playing in Los Angeles, and I told the people there that I was a member of AA, the front office, and their reaction, I think, was predictable. They said, so what? Does that mean you won't be here? I think I'm the only part-time employee they've ever had who's never missed a day's work. Later, of course, I was no longer lonely in the press box. By the time I left my regular duties there and just began to work on a spot basis, we had 3 sports writers, half a dozen other support personnel, the scoreboard operator's 2 brothers, and the scoreboard operator wasn't looking too good. And I wouldn't have missed that for anything. I like to see drunks wherever I run across them, in press boxes or in courtrooms or anyplace else. And I really wish that I had film of the way that one of the sports writers, who has well over 10 years, when he and I eat dinner together in Dodger Stadium, I wish I had film of the way we're treated. Because it's something to behold. As you know, press boxes in the ballparks have restaurants behind them, and everything is free, and they have a bar, and everything is free there. And when this friend of mine and I have dinner in Dodger Stadium, I get better service than I've had anywhere in the world in a restaurant. And I get better service than the owner of the Dodgers, for good reason. The owner of the Dodgers does not belong to Alcoholics Anonymous. But the press box waiter does. And we take care of our own. And when the sports writer and I have dinner there, we talk about the meetings we've been to and the speakers we've heard and what our home groups are doing. And we talk about it a little louder than we really have to. With the possible exception of a drunk tank, I've never found any place that's got any more newcomers to the acre than a press box has. And sooner or later, we are going to take over in there. It's only a matter of time. But I wouldn't trade those guys, the waiter and the sports writer and those other people, for all of the corporation presidents and brain surgeons that I used to drink with. I drank in the same sleazy bars you did, but I never drank with ordinary people. I couldn't find any. If I went into a place that did not have a CPA for the evening, I might become one just to help them out a little bit. I worked in New Orleans at one time, but Betty, you are really in for it. I think I got to Alcoholics Anonymous about 3 years early just by transferring my license plate there, but I worked in New Orleans one time, and I used to drink in a little bar where they had my entire philosophy of life on the back wall. 4 words: get drunk, be somebody. And I desperately wanted to. I'm not going to talk much longer. I promised that I would quit on time. I scared Rich a little bit, our leader here. I told him about a story that we tell in California. I don't know whether it's true or not, about one of those meetings we had where we had two speakers instead of one, and they were both given a certain amount of time to fill. And the first speaker got carried away. And when his time was up and he didn't finish, the leader of the meeting just reached over and tugged him on the coat, and the guy just went right on talking, you know. And after five more minutes, he reached up and he grabbed him by the tie and tugged him. And the guy just brushed him off and went right on talking. Well, the leader got so mad, he picked up his gavel and threw it at him. And he missed him and hit an old-timer in the front row right between the eyes. And the old-timer, as he was sliding out of the seat, was heard to whisper, "Hit me again, I can still hear it." For those of you who have taken the appreciable risk of sitting in the front seat, I do not intend to make you targets here. You know, I spoke earlier about how I felt about coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I felt terrible about it, the way everybody else does, I think, on your first visit. But I don't think anybody has ever described that better than a guy from Norm's home area. He came down to speak at one of my early meetings, and he had the best description of how my kind of newcomer felt about coming to AA that I've ever heard, and it was in the form of a letter. It was an advice to the lovelorn thing, and I got a copy of it later. And I'll pass it on to those of you who may be new or relatively new. It began, "Dear Abigail Van Buren, I have a brother who has been executed for murder, and another who is doing life for rape, and a third who is a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My mother sells dope to high school kids, and my father makes bathtub gin. Recently, I fell in love with a girl who has been sentenced to the state prison for smothering her illegitimate child, and I want to marry her. My question is, should I tell her about my brother who's on AA? And that's just about the way I felt about you when I came in. Isn't it remarkable how our attitudes change over the years? I tell people now that I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous for a number of reasons. One of which is, it's a remarkably good source of newcomers. As much as we are doing to put the word out about alcoholism and recovery, I still find that there are people that I may have worked with 5 or 10 or 15 years ago, or have known socially or in some other context, who will discover an alcoholism problem in their family or with their friends or with their co-workers or sometimes in their own lives, and I may be the only guy they know who's ever dealt with it. And so I get an occasional call that way, and I'm pleased to get them. Another reason I tell people is I don't have to make up those funny stories when I go to cocktail parties about why I'm not drinking. I've never been offered a drink by anybody who knew I was an alcoholic. And I've seen one or two guys who were coming in here new who were a little shy about breaking their anonymity, and I suspect it might have been for that reason. But in any event, it's much easier just to tell people I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't have to make up stories at these parties when they have the punch bowl off to the side, like, you know, I'm having stomach trouble or I'm thinking about becoming a Mormon or one of those things. And the most important reason I tell people is because I am proud of you and proud to be a part of your progress and pleased with what has happened to me since I've been here. And I would like to take just a few minutes here at the end to talk a little bit about some of the opinions I have formed since I have been here. And I pass these along free of charge for whatever use they may be, and subject to the notice that I may change all of my opinions on 24 hours notice as I learn more about this program. But I am absolutely convinced that Alcoholics Anonymous is the biggest con game I've ever seen. I came in here believing that you were going to deal with my drinking problem, not realizing that my drinking was a symptom of my real problem, which was living. And that's the one thing that you are uniquely qualified to deal with. People who cannot live successfully out there. Now, I was a little disappointed because I came to AA and drank once and came back. Otherwise, I would have had something over 18 years by now. And when I came back to the program, I was undergoing some unpleasant physical sensations that are known to us all. And I had a copy of the big book. And I went through that book wondering how you get over the shakes, and I found that in the basic text of our fellowship, there isn't a single word on physical sobriety. If there had been a consumer advocate at that time, I might have turned you in. Because I thought the book had been sold to me under false pretenses. Not a word in there on how to get physically sober. The entire book deals with how to stay sober by dealing with the obsession once physical sobriety has been obtained. Another thing about the fifth chapter that I think is a little bit misleading is that bit about some of us have underlying emotional disorders. I have been waiting desperately for 17 and a half years for some guy to walk in and say, I am a normal, well-adjusted, happy newcomer who is just drinking himself to death, and I would like some help. Everybody I've talked to so far and every story I've heard seems to come from one of those people with underlying emotional disorders, and I certainly had mine. And I think it's a gentle way of letting us into the fact that this problem is at once more deep and yet more soluble than any of us suspected when we came here. And I am amazed at the fact that Alcoholics Anonymous is as clear and as simple, although not easy, but as simple as we find it to be. I thought it was so deceptively simple when I read the steps that there must be something you had left out. Did you have the feeling when you were new that if you could really turn it on for about 90 days and convince the old-timers that you were sincere, that some night after the meeting was over, they'd take you back in the back room and add that one additional step that would make it all fall into place? And I was a little bit disappointed on my first birthday to realize that the old-timers were doing it the same way I was. You know, right out of the book, it's there. And of course, I found too that Alcoholics Anonymous deals with attitudes. That basically what this program is designed to do is to give you and I a certain simple attitude described in chapters 2 and 3 of the big book that will enable us to live comfortably on the outside. In essence, there is a source of power in this program that I had no idea was here, and it is more vast and obviously more awesome than anything I've ever encountered. If you want to get just a glimpse of it, let me suggest this. Talk to the best psychiatrist you can find about compulsive behavior patterns and ask him what kind of luck he's having in dealing with people with those patterns. If he is really top drawer, he may be helping 3%. For the last 45 years, Alcoholics Anonymous has been helping 75% of the compulsive behavior patterns that walk in that door and every other door like it, the compulsive behavior pattern being manifested in alcoholism. That's raw power. You may put any label on it you want, but it's there. And it comes into being the minute I begin to work these 12 deceptively simple steps. I noticed at first when for the first time in my life, it was no longer necessary for me to drink after I came here. And then as I began to work it and I began to read the program, it became apparent to me that I'm not entitled to practice these principles only on that immediate drinking problem. I'm required to practice these principles in all of my affairs. So that same source of power which has enabled me to live comfortably without alcohol for 17 and a half years is available in any area of my life where I am willing to use it. It's there to make me a better member of my community, a better member of my family, a better member of my profession. I can use it anywhere I wish by simply applying these principles one day at a time. And that's a lot more intoxicating than anything I ever get out of a bottle. I am absolutely convinced that you and I can go anywhere we want to go, we can do anything we want to do, and become any kind of people we want to become. If we will first and foremost apply the conditions of this program to our lives one day at a time, and then make the sacrifices necessary to get what we want, God will give us every single thing we are capable of handling, provided nothing becomes more important to us than being sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's more intoxicating than anything I ever get out of a bottle. And so if you be new or relatively new, and you're worried about coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, be assured that those of us who are here now as recovering alcoholics did not come here in order to die sober. We came here to learn to live that way. I didn't come here in order to go into some kind of a spiritual leisure world. I came here because I wanted a bigger slice of life out there. And I never in my life went first class until I met you. And I've never gone second class since. Every successful person I have ever known has been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. In the true sense of success. We learn early on that success and prosperity have nothing to do with the horsepower of your car, the size of your wallet. There's great truth in that old joke that if you want to see what God thinks of money, look at the people he gives it to. But by the same token, if you define success as we do, as being the ability to live comfortably with yourself, the success rate in Alcoholics Anonymous is staggering. There are people who are working this program so well that I feel better the minute they walk in the room, even if we don't have a chance to talk. Norm, whom you heard Friday night, is a good example of that. There are people in this program who have learned to control that inner emotional core to such a degree that they have achieved the serenity the book talks about. And you know, if you and I can control our emotional reactions to the world, it doesn't matter what happens out there. We can never again be hurt. We can love freely and fully and openly without being vulnerable to anything. We can go from the position of being our own worst enemy to our own best friend. And that's more intoxicating than anything I ever get out of a bottle. And I'm grateful to you for it. I am aware this morning that if there's any part of my life that's unhappy or unsatisfying or unfulfilling, you have already given me the tools to change it, if I will use them the way you have taught me to. And so never again do I have to settle for second best. Never again do I have to be unhappy or unfulfilled, but never again can I blame anybody else for it, because I know, too, that I already have what's necessary to change it. You've given me that. Perhaps most importantly, you have given me of your lives during the 17 and a half years that I have been sober. There is a certain basic excitement to being around drunks that I have never found with anybody else in the world. At first, I just thought you were weird. Later, as I got to know you, I realized that the source of this excitement is your ability to live in the present, one day at a time. Everybody lives in the present, but we're the only ones who enjoy it. It amazes me, you know, that in Alcoholics Anonymous, there are so many young people of all ages. If you define young as being those people whose aspirations are more important than their memories, I can't find any oldsters in here. And if you can find people who are excited about living now, that's Alcoholics Anonymous. We are people who are neither shackled by the past nor terrified of the future, who are aware that all we have is today, but that God has already given us everything we need today in order to be happy right up until bedtime tonight, if we choose to. And that's more intoxicating than anything I ever get out of a bottle. And in the last analysis, I guess that the thing that keeps bringing me back to you again and again and again is the love and the understanding that these drunks have for each other. It's fully as addictive as anything that ever brought me here in the first place. It's an amazing thing for a loner, and we've all been loners, with all those defense mechanisms built, and they're always built when we come in here, to find out sometime in those first months or years that for the first time in your life you're with people who love you openly, freely, and without reservation. And you cannot absorb that love day after day after day without coming to the point in your own life where no matter how self-centered you've been, you suddenly realize you can look at a bunch of drunks and honestly say to them, I love you. And you too. And I guess in the last analysis, I enjoy being with you because I am absolutely convinced that when you come into Alcoholics Anonymous, regardless of your age or circumstance or condition, you can absolutely rely on one fact. The best day of our lives has not yet been lived, and every day we stay sober, it gets closer. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. You know, when Barney asked me to come down and chair this meeting, I thought it really bothered me, but really it's been a privilege to stand up here and look at all you beautiful people, and I can feel the love out there. And this conference has been a labor of love, and the man who made it possible is sitting right here, Barney.
I didn't make this possible. This would have been a hell of a conference if the only one showed up was the speaker's in the committee, wouldn't it? But you people have made this. And a lot of other people, I'm going to try to be very brief. There is a couple in the audience that I would like to stand that probably come the longest distance to attend this conference, and I've got to visit with him shortly. Well, John, you and your lovely wife stand up there from Australia. And I don't want to take the credit for this conference. There was a lot of people that put in a lot of time and effort in this. And really, as I think back, I had very little to do with it. Now, they tell me in the past that you shouldn't mention names when you're thanking the people, and there's a lot of people that did a lot of work that I couldn't think of all of them mentioning their names. But there's three or four that I am going to, and maybe not in the order that their work, but there is. And the first thing I'd like for you to meet is my lovely wife, Doris, and it was her patience to put up with me. Stand up. I told her Friday, she said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, from Friday noon till Sunday noon, my time belongs to the Kansas State Conference. And there were three other people that's been a tremendous help. You've heard Marty's name mentioned. And there's also a couple of guys, Don and Frank, will you stand up? That's been tremendous. And we couldn't have had it without them three people. And I certainly want to thank the speakers for coming, Phil and his wife and the rest of you, for being here and to making this weekend possible for us. We had about 1,975. That's an unofficial count. You know, like they do in the votes, we kind of run them over fast this morning, registered for this conference. It has been a pleasure for me and each and every one of you out here. It's helped my sobriety to do that, and each and every one of you here has been a part of my sobriety. This is the time of the year I get to see a lot of people that back early played a big part in my sobriety. And a good friend asked me, and they said no announcements, but I will say Chuck and Elsa C. will be in Topeka on October the 21st at the Civic Center for their AA banquet. I did ask Bill, you know, if we get off on that. This has been a lovely conference to me. I've had a lot to do in different capacities with a lovely conference. And I think, as far as I'm concerned personally, this one went the best of any. And as far as I'm concerned, it's the greatest, not particularly because I was the chairman, because you people made it that way. And I guess, as I can say, just thank you and God love all of you for being here. And I hope we see you all here next year. So let's stand and join hands if you care to and close this conference with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Thank you.